Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, that I expressed to them I was mad. I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's current sports. Welcome to the show, ladies and gents, boys and girls. Thank you for being a part of current sports on this, what is it, Wednesday already? Wednesday already, hump day. My goodness, October 4th, 2017, right here on WKAR AM 870, 94.5 FM. We've got a great hour of sports talk coming right at you. As you guys know, as we've been talking about throughout the week thus far, it is Rivals Week. Michigan and Michigan State will go at it. 7:30 p.m. under the lights at the Big House. First ever night game in the history of this contest on Saturday. We, of course, will take your calls, comments, multiple ways you can do so. Again, you can call in and be a part of the show at 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Join us via social media at facebook.com/currentsports or tweet us at my Twitter handle, at Al Martin, WKAR, or at WKAR underscore sports. We want to get your thoughts and predictions on that matchup and on today's current sports. We will welcome to the show our dear friend, Adam Biggers, Michigan and Michigan State Big Ten writer for Fan Rag Sports. Adam will help us preview this matchup. We'll get his thoughts and predictions on that matchup. You don't want to miss that. We will also talk some Detroit Tigers, as promised at the end of yesterday's show, as we, of course, briefly talked about the Tigers tying for the worst record in the majors. It was not a great season. It's going to be a rebuild year coming up next year, and for maybe the next 2 to 3 seasons, if you ask me. We'll talk about the rebuild and who exactly is in the running now to replace Brad Ausmus as the Tigers manager. And we will also talk about the MLB playoffs, which officially kicked off last night with a pretty entertaining wild card matchup between the New York Yankees and the Minnesota Twins. If you don't want to miss that convo, we'll have plenty of MLB dialogue coming right at you. And on the back end of the show, we'll talk about the NBA ditching the old format of the old All-Star Game format of the Eastern Conference taking on the Western Conference. I absolutely love this. You got to breathe some new life into it because right now the game is just ho-hum, very boring, a tremendous lack of competitiveness. Maybe this will breathe some new life into the All-Star Weekend. And we will also talk about the Hornets and Pistons tonight at Little Caesars Arena, the Pistons beginning preseason play. That and more. Again, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. But hey, you know what's next? Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. right, and we start with some local high school football news. Due to safety concerns, Potterville will forfeit its upcoming game to CMAC opponent Pawamo Westphalia. Now, first-year coach Dave Matthews, Potterville's fourth coach in the last 4 years, said that the team has only between 19 and 23 players ready to play currently, seven of those being freshmen. He's putting safety first and is deciding to just forfeit tomorrow's game. Now, though this isn't the first time Potterville had to forfeit a game. Last season, they forfeited a CMAC game due to injuries as well. So, again, the Potterville and Pawamo Westphalia game is off for Friday night. All right, the University of North Texas Mean Green filed a cease and desist letter to ESPN and Michigan State early on Wednesday, today, for the cable network's use of UNT's trademarked mascot in a promotion for Saturday's Michigan and Michigan State football game. The network's promo for the primetime game had the Wolverines taking on the, quote, Mean Green. First off, Isaac, have you ever heard of Michigan State being referred to as Mean Green? I think that's something new that ESPN is going to try this year. But it may land them into legal trouble, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, with these copyright things, do you remember when Michigan, too, had Maize and Blue removed from their title for a full year? That was absurd.
I know, right? Legal jargon, right? UNT Athletic Director Warren Baker, he tweeted a statement since then that ESPN has since, quote, corrected the commercial once becoming aware of the issue. He went on to say, I also received communication from Mark Hollis at Michigan State, who fully understands the importance of the Mean Green brand to UNT. I'm appreciative of our longtime partner ESPN for quickly addressing the issue. I also appreciate the communication from Mark, who is regarded as one of the true leaders in intercollegiate athletics. So that's pulled from the promo. Interesting story there. All right. MSU men's soccer will begin a season-long three-game road trip this afternoon as the number 6 Spartans travel to Kalamazoo to take on the number 12-ranked Western Michigan University Broncos. Now, the Spartans are off a 5-1 win against the number 16 Ohio State Buckeyes. The Spartans will have to get past the 9-1-1 Broncos today. Now, MSU has dominated Western with a 32-2-8 all-time series record, which includes a 13-1-4 record in KZU. Game time, 4:30 p.m. And folks who have been fiending for some Michigan State hockey will get a chance to check out the team today at Mount Ice Arena. The Michigan State men's hockey team will scrimmage today to mark the unofficial start of the hockey season. The Spartans will host the University of Toronto on Saturday for its only other exhibition game before beginning the regular season against Bowling Green next week. Now, the intra-squad game today will be Danton Coles first since taking over the Spartans in the offseason. The puck will drop at 7:30 p.m. at MSU's own Munn Ice Arena. Should be exciting later on this evening. All right, Coach Kathy George and the MSU volleyball team will travel to Lincoln, Nebraska tonight as the Spartans get ready to play the number 4 Nebraska Cornhuskers. MSU is coming off sweeps of Maryland and Ohio State to start 4-0 in the Big Ten season for the first time since 2013. Nebraska, however, also enters the game 4-0 in conference play. Tonight's match is scheduled to start at 8 p.m. MSU will host number 7 Wisconsin at Jennison Fieldhouse on Saturday. It's been over 40 years since the Detroit basketball Pistons last played in downtown Detroit, but that will change tonight as the Pistons welcome the Charlotte Hornets to Little Caesars Arena to kick off exhibition play. The Hornets went 36-46 last season, and the Pistons finished just a game better at 37-45. Not a great year for the red, white, and royal blue. Tip-off set for 7 p.m. tonight. I love this idea from the NBA. The NBA All-Star Game will no longer be in East versus West format, and instead will have two captains pick the teams. The league announced that on Tuesday at the North, and also that the new format will begin for this season's game in L.A., which will take place on February 18th. So, how it will work is the two starters with the highest fan vote totals from each conference will choose teams from the pool of players who were voted into the game. The game will also now be played for charity. I love this, with proceeds raised from the game either going to organizations from the hosting city or national foundations. Also, baseball, gotta love it. Casey, we have Casey Harrison actually live in studio with us. I'll let Casey handle this one because he is a baseball nut. Casey, how you doing, my man?
I am doing great, Al. How are you doing?
Great, great. What happened last night? Nothing really happened in baseball last night, right?
No. Just the start of the postseason. The New York Yankees, their playoff hopes are still alive today after they defeated the Minnesota Twins 8-4 in the American League wildcard game. New York overcame Minnesota's 3-run first inning with a 3-run bottom of the first inning of their own, capped off by a home run from D.D. Gregorius. Brett Gardner, Aaron Judge both went yard for the Bronx Bombers, but Judge's homer was effectively the final nail in the coffin.
Line to left field and deep. Gone! Aaron Judge with a 2-run homer. And the Yankees extend the lead.
New York will travel to Houston Thursday for Game 1 of the American League Divisional Series. Former Tiger Justin Verlander, he will get the start for the Astros. And meanwhile, the Colorado Rockies and Arizona Diamondbacks will square off in tonight's NL wildcard game. The winner will advance to play the Los Angeles Dodgers in the NLDS. First pitch for that game set for 7 p.m.
All right. Thank you, Casey. Exciting stuff. I absolutely love playoff baseball, and I tune into just about the entirety of that game last night. So we'll have more on the MLB playoffs in just a moment, more on the Detroit Tigers in just a moment. Again, want to be a part of the fun? You know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to Facebook.com/CurrentSports to catch the live stream and weigh in that way, and also tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports.
Comeback victories against them earlier in the year, so we just went out there and played our game.
We know we have a great lineup, and if we can just give them a chance to score runs, if they can do that. So I can't say that I've ever been in a playoff game when the bullpen's thrown 8 2/3, but we got the job done tonight, and we got a win.
We were down, so it just shows you like how hard we played, and we were down, and then we came back. So we go in there, we try to keep that same rhythm, same everything going, and try to play the game the right way, and try to enjoy it.
Oh, how fun was that last night, right? The MLB playoffs are officially underway. You just heard the call last night. Aaron Judge going yard yet again. How great has he been this year? One of my favorite players in the majors. You also heard the voices of D.D. Gregorius. Also, David Robertson discussing the win. Moving on now in the playoffs. And we're going to get a bit of an overview of the MLB playoffs in just a minute. And you'll get to hear our thoughts and predictions on who we believe will go all the way to win the World Series this year. Mine is pretty obvious, I must say. I won't be giving you guys some breaking news when providing my prediction or a hot take, I should say, right? We encourage you all to weigh in, though. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. One thing does confuse me, though. We do have Casey Harrison, who is going to join us for this conversation right now as well as we talk some baseball. Dave from Wyoming, I see you, because I know Dave wants to weigh in on the Michigan and Michigan State rivalry. Again, we're taking your calls, thoughts, and predictions throughout the week for the big game this Saturday under the lights at the Big House. But to start with some baseball really briefly here, you know, watching the Yankees, this is the New York Yankees, Casey. This is the Yankees, all right? And I tweeted this out last night. You know, I don't understand why you have to pop bottles, why you have to pop champagne for a wild card win. I get it for other franchises who may not have had the track record of success. Not many teams have had, like the New York Yankees historically. But this is the New York Yankees, for goodness sake. They're popping champagne for a wild card win against the Minnesota Twins, Casey. Why do they do that? I don't understand that.
It's been a long time coming for them to get back to the playoffs, though.
I hear you.
I mean, it's been what, since 2000? I can't even remember the last time they were in the playoffs. What, was it 12?
Yeah, I believe it was 2012.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I mean, that's just not the New York Yankees' MO to be out of the playoffs in and out for that long of a time. Because, I mean, you go back before 2012, the last time before then, really.
Right,
I mean,
right.
It's... ever since they won the, I think, was it 09 they won the World Series?
Yeah, I believe it was. I didn't mean to double check that, but
they kind of fell off ever since then.
But still, it's the Yankees, for goodness sake. This is the franchise. This is like the Cowboys of, mm-hmm. the NFL, right? I mean,
they're a lot Yankees, better than the Cowboys.
Stop
Let's
it,
be
Isaac,
real,
stop
Al.
It.
Come on.
Here you go. Why you got to bust my Cowboys?
But you know
every
that's
time
true.
Them?
The Yankees Look, are
the
like Yankees 20 are championships like, above anybody else
you
know, in baseball.
This puts in perspective just how powerful the New York Yankees are in the world of baseball. The ratings were up 58% in comparison to last year's wild card game. 58%, that's more than half.
Wow.
Compared to last year's wild card game between the Toronto Blue Jays and the Baltimore Orioles. I saw the ratings this morning and I almost spilled my coffee on my Mac laptop. I said, you're crazy. That's insane.
That is
just like
amazing.
The Cowboys ratings every single week, even though my Cowboys have not won a Super Bowl since the 90s. The ratings every week when you put the Cowboys on a Sunday night football game or, heck, even a Sunday afternoon game at 1 p.m. are going to be much higher than the rest of the league. That's just how it is. The fans tune in to watch the Cowboys and the Yankees and just the like the Lakers in the NBA.
True.
I mean, the Lakers have been horrible, but yet people still tune in, right? But why pop champagne when you win a wild card game?
I was going to say the exact same thing. It's so funny you brought that up because I had that in my mind. I'm thinking of the Birdman song, Pop Bottles. Okay, we popping champagne like we won a championship game.
Exactly.
No, you didn't.
No, you didn't.
You won
a wild card
game, and you're about to lose in the next round.
I was going to say, it's their only chance they're going to be able to pop some bottles, though, because, I mean, Cleveland's going to take care of business pretty easily.
Well, your prediction's already out the bag, too. So Casey and I, we believe that already that, you know, just to throw it out there, I'm going with the Indians to win the World Series, Isaac. Who's your pick?
This is going to be so boring. I said the Indians,
too. You too.
You're
playing so well right now. So none of us are bringing any hot takes. Like, the Rockies are going all the way. No. We're not saying that. Okay. Let's talk Tigers real briefly here, though, because... yeah, we have to do it. I know. I can feel our listeners just saying, oh, gosh, yeah, why do we have to go down this topic right now to lead the show? But we're talking baseball. We'll just put a wrap on the season right now. But it's been well documented, as most of you know. The Tigers went 64-98. Yeah, 64-98. Is what the Tigers' final record was here in 2017. That's what it looked like. The worst record since 2003 for this franchise. And in 2003, that was a bad year, right? That was the year the Tigers lost 119 games. Just one loss shy of the record set by the 1962 Mets. So the Tigers finished last place in the American League Central Division for the second time in 3 years and tied with the San Francisco Giants for that worst record in baseball. Now, I'm going to bring a bit of optimism for Tigers fans out there. Now, I know 98 losses is not good. not good at all. And finishing tied for the worst record in baseball is not good. They went 6-24 in the month of September alone. They had the ninth worst winning percentage and seventh most losses in a year in franchise history. In a way, though, this is a good thing, okay? Tigers fans are probably out there right now cringing, listening to me say that. But hear me out, all right? This is a Tigers team that now officially knows what it needs to do. A complete rebuild is now in the works. And Casey just noted during that intro, and he believes it's going to take longer than 2 to 3. That's what I said to start the show. But I wouldn't be surprised, Casey, if it takes 4 to 5, right? Now, I believe that now you no longer have to watch a Tigers team that is trying to really hold on to expensive free agent contracts and aging veterans to provide what many believe, in my eyes as well, was an illusion that the old English D can still make a run come October. J.D. Martinez, Justin Upton, gone. Justin Wilson, gone. Justin Verlander, gone. You now have the first pick in the 2018 MLB draft. Now, this isn't the NBA where having the first pick in the draft is going to lead to an immediate game changer of a player that can completely put a franchise on his back and back on the winning track. But this does help. And then you add that pick to the prospects you already have, which I like. I like the young prospects that the Tigers do have now. I wasn't high on them at first because I didn't really know much about them. But Yamir Callan, I can never pronounce his last name. I can never pronounce.
Candelario.
Thank you. Thank you, Casey. Candelario, 23-year-old. He was acquired from the Chicago Cubs. He hit 330, 406, and 448. During his time with the Tigers. That was pretty impressive. I know that he, Casey, was the best prospect that the Tigers had in this whole overhaul. What were you? Just, I'm curious. Get your thoughts on Candelario, excuse me, and just where his ceiling is. Were you impressed with what he did once coming to the Tigers?
I liked what he was able to do. I don't know if he'll able, if in a 162 game, you know, re-replication of that, I don't think he can necessarily attain that. But, I mean, it's a good sample size. You should be able to look forward to what he'll be able to do in the future. I think he could be, you know, just below a 300 hitter. But it's more than just that. I mean, it's, I don't know if Castellanos can move to right field.
Right.
I don't know if, Mikey Matuk, I don't know if he'll be able to, you know, have the kind of season that he did. There's a bunch of things that, you know, kind of look good going forward. But the way I look at it, you got the big boxes out in your spring cleaning. I mean, you took them out to the curb, but there's still a bunch of things you still have to vacuum. You still have to dust.
It's going
to
take some. It's going to take a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take a while. But, you know, along with, you know, Candelario, Dansk Camerun, age 20, the son of former major leaguer Mike Camerun. I think he has a chance to be solid. Also, Jake Rogers, who came to the Tigers organization along with Camerun in the JV trade. He's ranked by MLB Pipeline among the top 10 catching prospects. And then there's 18-year-old Isaac Paredes, a well-regarded shortstop expected to develop additional power and penciled in for a 2020 MLB debut, which is down the line, right? But I like the young prospects that the Tigers have, Isaac. And I think right now, because again, if the Tigers didn't make this overhaul and they didn't sell come that trade deadline, I still think that Al Avila and that team would have been holding on to these old aging stars and trying to force that window back open that this team could get back to a World Series. I think right now, you know where you're headed. You're headed for a rebuild, and let's pick it up from there.
I've been begging the Tigers to rebuild for a few years now. I thought that they were always a little bit overjudged by fans, in fact, because, again, you've got the bullpen errors, which you just can't make up for. You can't have 6 innings that are good baseball every game and then 3 innings which are awful baseball for the rest. Tigers, they've got some prospects, and this draft will certainly help having the number 1 overall pick. I'll be interested to see which route they go. I personally think they should focus in on pitching. We've seen the problems of the past. Might as well address it now. I like Alex Fiedo, too, who's coming out of the minors. I think he's had a few performances for the Tigers as well and looked pretty good in those.
Well, yeah, speaking of that, I mean, you look at Matt Manning, Bo Burrows, and Alex Fiedo. All three of those pitchers currently among the top 100 prospects in the game right now.
Exactly.
All estimated to make their debuts in 2019 or 2020. So I like that as well. I mean, they got some young talent.
They're building well.
Right.
It's just not evenly distributed through just yet. The good news is they have a lot of young outfielders and infielders already in the majors right now. I mean, you already brought up Candelario, but in addition to him, I mean, you got Iglesias, you got Castellanos. All those guys will be around for years to come. So they have that base. It's just making sure that you have the depth and then real elite prospects, because what the Tigers don't have is a real great farm system right now. It's not to say they don't have a few people, but at the same time, when you really look for the treasure trove, that's with other teams.
Yeah, and probably the player I've been saving him for last and I'm probably most excited about is Franklin Perez. 19 years old, really eating up the AA. MLB Pipeline has him ranked as high as 40th overall and estimates a major league debut as soon as 2018. So I've heard some great things about Franklin Perez. I haven't really seen him play, but his numbers look great, Casey. I'm going to put you on the spot right now. But I, you know, with Brad Ausmus, which, thank goodness, I think Brad, you know, in many ways, Brad was put in a position that was a bit unfair. This is a guy who really had no experience. No experience, expected to take over a roster that had some great pieces to it and to lead them to the promised land. And he came into a situation that, if he did not win a World Series right off rip, his job was going to be on the line. He knew what he signed up for. However, when evaluating the contracts and aging superstars, I thought that Brad Ausmus was really in a lose-lose situation. And then, you know, you look at Brad and talk about experience. I mean, I would just listen to Brad Ausmus sometimes after games, and I just never got the feeling that he had two hands on the steering wheel, that he really didn't know where he wanted that car to go. He just kind of looked confused at times. Brad is now out. Who do you see as a possible, as the possible guy to come in and lead this Tigers team come next season right now, Casey? There are a lot of names thrown around out there, I know.
For the love of God, do not hire anybody in-house right now.
That's who they've been talking to right now, at least, yeah.
Omar Vizquel, I mean, great career, very respected. I think you learned with Brad Ausmus that you can't have a first-time manager lead this team, especially, I mean, these are a critical couple of years now in this rebuild that you really need to develop this talent. You need somebody who's proven. You need somebody who's going to, you know, turn this talent into something that it wants to be, really. So that's why I want to see Ron Gardenhire.
Okay.
The way that he managed the Twins in the late, early 2000s, I mean, they were always just a thorn in your side. I remember watching them growing up, and Minnesota and the White Sox, they'd always beat up on the Tigers. And I mean, it wasn't just hey, we'll play back and forth. It was a clean, like, stomp
right
on the Tigers.
Right.
I really like the brand of baseball that Ron Gardenhire kind of brings to the table.
And he's currently the Diamondbacks bench coach right now,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know, you know, you mentioned Omar. He's the first base coach. I believe he's already sat down with Brad. Seeing, you know, reported by the Free Press, the third base coach, Dave Clark, also sitting down with Brad, Al Avila, excuse me. And so they've been interviewing everybody in-house right now. And I think, you know, you talk about external candidates, you know, like Ron, coaching in the postseason, which include Ron, you know, you have to kind of wait until, they're kind of in a sticky situation right now. You have to wait until their season is done before you can sit down and interview those candidates. So playing the waiting game right now, right?
And I think if you're going purely off experience, I think the next best guy there who still isn't that good of a fit, I wouldn't like to see him in the Tigers, would be Lloyd McClendon. I mean, that's another in-house hire. Your hitting coach, you're very familiar with him.
Right.
But I mean, if you look to see what he did with Seattle, and then a couple of years back what he did with Pittsburgh, I mean, I think the track record kind of shows for itself.
Definitely.
Right.
And he's considered to be the as you noted, Casey, the strongest in-house candidate, Lloyd McClendon is. But also, you know, Rockies bench coach Mike Redmond, he's been thrown out. His name has been thrown out. Astros bench coach Alex Cora as well. So there's a lot of names. I think we have to just kind of wait until maybe after the postseason before the Tigers really make a move, right?
Yeah, I think Gardenhire is probably your home run hit.
Mm-hmm.
If you're able to get him, that's probably your best choice. Interesting thing about Mike Redmond, too, is I think he was the Indians player that hit the hit against Armando Galarraga
Really?
He was playing for
Cleveland.
To break
up the no-hitter?
I'm about 95% sure he was the guy to do it.
Really?
Interesting. I know he was on Cleveland during that game, and I'm almost positive it was him that hit that. So that'd be kind of cool to see that full circle. That'd be an interesting narrative. If I was a Tigers beat reporter, that'd be one of my first stories if they hired him.
Yeah, for sure. that sounds interesting for sure.
But okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we're all going with the Indians, so our World Series picks are already out. I'll go into more detail if we have time later on this hour, but right now we got to hit our first break. Dave, is he still there? Is he still there, Isaac?
Dave is still there.
Dave, hold on tight, because after this first break, you will be the first man up, and we'll get to, of course, our guest for today's current sports, Adam Biggers, Michigan MSU Big Ten writer for Fan Rag Sports. That and more. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We just finished up segment A, dedicated to the Detroit Tigers rebuild, as well as a little bit of MLB playoff talk. The Yankees now move on, topping the Minnesota Twins last night in the American League wild card game. And tonight, you can catch the NL wild card matchup between the Colorado Rockies at the Arizona Diamondbacks. That will be an 8:08 Eastern time first pitch on TBS. And Justin Verlander will be on the mound. How about that? Wow, JV. Hard to believe that he's still, on Thursday. New York will travel to Houston on Thursday, and that's when you can catch Justin Verlander. He'll get the start for the Astros. But it's really, again, just hard to believe that JV is not a member of the Detroit Tigers. Still weird, very weird. But again, the Rockies and Diamondbacks tonight, tonight's NL wildcard matchup. Winner will advance to play either will play the LA Dodgers in the NLDS. All right, let's talk rivalry now. Rivals Week is here. Michigan and Michigan State will go at it for the first ever night game at 7:30 p.m. at the Big House. Again, we're taking your calls, comments, throughout this week here on Current Sports, previewing that matchup. Before we get to Adam Biggers of Fan Rag Sports, we have a man who has been waiting oh so patiently to weigh in on the Spartans and Wolverines rivalry. It's one of our favorite callers on line one, Dave from Wyoming. Dave, how you doing? And thanks for waiting, my man.
Well, thank you. First, I feel older because I was at the Fisk game last year that played in Detroit.
You were at which game? Which game was that, Dave?
I went to Pistons games when they played their last season in Detroit.
Oh, how about that? And now they make the return for the first time since then.
Now you're really making me feel old.
How about that?
Since you hit on a bunch of other subjects. One, Tigers could be a long rebuild because I don't think they can go free agent like they have in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something had to give with $199 million payroll and the way they were headed. About the draft, too, remember Aaron Judge, first of all, he's a tune-in guy, right? You're going to watch the game if he's playing because anything can happen because of him.
Right.
But also, you know, he spent several years playing college baseball and then was in the minors.
He was.
Like 25, 26 years old. So
yep.
This isn't like NFL draft a guy 21, 22. Here he is starting for you. Or NBA. It's a while. Yankees ratings, remember, you always got a group of Yankee fans, but nobody's ambivalent about the Yankees. You want to see them lose, or you want to see them win.
Exactly. Just like the Cowboys in the NFL. You either love them or you hate them.
Yeah, love them or hate them. About Michigan State, I got a rant to end, but, you know, as in every game that's played over there, my hope is that Michigan State can be in a position to win the game the last 3-4 minutes, maybe the last 5 minutes. And their defense plays well. If they can make it a defensive battle, they got a shot. And put the ball, hopefully Lewerke stays healthy, put the ball in his hands, and they can go. And this brings me to my last, the rant is, all week I've heard from various people and message boards, some other people, how Michigan State, you know, they really should just, you know, Dave Warner should just go in a corner and tower with Mark D'Antonio because he's got the great and powerful Don Brown. And Michigan State might as well not even show up. You know, just mail in a ticket, say thank you for the money, and go home.
Yeah.
And I guess my point is I've had the good fortune to know guys who were offensive coordinators on Oklahoma's team, and Barry Switzer was there, as well as some guys in the MAC. Offensive coordinator's job is more than just, okay, here's the game plan, this is going to work. You know, you got to look at your personnel. So, like last week, Michigan State had Jarvis, and he's a 6'6", 312 freshman, but he's still a freshman, starting against sophomores and juniors. That's one thing. The other thing is the defensive coordinator on the other side of the ball, they make adjustments during the game, too, and the play calling sometimes isn't made to, quote, succeed. You hope it will. But sometimes it's just set up to see what the defense coordinator is going to do or what the defense is going to do, and then you adjust.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea that Michigan State is just terribly overmatched on the offense, Michigan's got a very nice defense right now.
They do.
But I'll remind folks that, you know, that great Don Brown defense of the year before had Florida State score 30 and Ohio State score 30 on them to end the year. So, you know, it's not unbeatable, and you have to have some breaks. But I think Michigan State is going to cover the line at 12. I think they can get it below 10 and really have a shot to win. I just wish that the kickoff game was bombing them in the end zone to stop any returns. Thanks.
Dave always brings it. Dave, thank you so much for your call. If you want to weigh in on the big rivalry matchup this Saturday night, at the Big House, 7:30 p.m. kick time between the Michigan State Spartans and the Michigan Wolverines. Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's get to our guest for today's current sports. He is a dear friend and I always love having him on. He knows his stuff for sure. His name is Adam Biggers, Michigan and Michigan State Big Ten writer for Fan Rag Sports. Adam, how you doing, my man? Thanks so much for coming on today.
Hey, Al, great to be back. Hey, it was great seeing you at the game this past Saturday. It's always great talking sports with you. So, yeah, it is that time of year, rivalry week, a little bit earlier, I think, than we're used to. But yeah, it's nonetheless still going to be a huge, huge game. And I agree with your previous caller, Dave, I believe.
Yeah.
I do think that if Michigan State can make this a defensive battle, that it gives the Spartans a good chance to win this game. I still like Michigan. I do think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I think it's going to be one where the defenses kind of negate each other, and this is one where ultimately it's going to be decided by the hands of Brian Lewerke and John O'Korn.
Yeah, I believe that as well, Adam. And, you know, I, speaking of John O'Korn, I want to start there because I think that's the big story from the Michigan side heading into this matchup. You know, Wilton Spate will not get the start due to injury, getting injured 2 weeks ago, I should say. What kind of swing does John O'Korn at quarterback present for the Wolverines, positive or negative? Because there are many that thought, you know, if Wilton Spate was healthy approaching this matchup this weekend, Adam, that there was a clear quarterback controversy at hand. What do you make of John O'Korn starting this game?
Well, I think it's a positive swing. I mean, for Michigan, that's the only way it can go. I don't think right now that they're the type of team that's going to take something and kind of dwell on it. I think it is a positive thing. And I think that you saw the way that the offense cleared against Purdue in the second half. John had pretty good command of it. I mean, he made things happen on his feet, really utilized the tight ends. And I think the tight ends are going to be big Saturday, Zach Gentry and Sean McCune, especially. Sean McCune is the real deal in terms of complete tight end. So keep an eye out for that kid. He's a true freshman.
Mm-hmm.
Or sophomore, I'm sorry. But at the same time, John does bring a little bit different style. I've always thought that Wilton Spate was the guy, and I think if he was healthy, he'd still be the guy. Players have seemed to rally around him a little bit. They're all pretty confident in his ability. John's always been a really confident guy, somebody who's just been waiting for a shot. And now that he does have a shot, regardless of the circumstances. The show belongs to John O'Korn, and I think it will probably be that case for the remainder of the season. I don't expect Wilton State to return at quarterback for the remainder of the season.
Really? So the injury is that serious, Dan? Huh, Adam? That's what you're hearing.
I believe so. I mean, Jim Harbaugh said it was multiple weeks. I would even have a hard time believing, let's say, it's just multiple weeks and John O'Korn plays up to the level that I think that he can. I think it'd be hard to give the keys back to Wilton, and that's not a knock on Wilton. Jim Harbaugh's talked about riding the hot hand all year. He's done so with his running backs. You know, one game is Ty Isaac, one game is Chris Evans. I'd have a hard time believing that he'd want to unseat John O'Korn should O'Korn go on and, you know, beat Michigan State, win a few games in a row. But I think John is in position right now, regardless of Wilton's health, to really take hold of the offense and kind of become that guy.
So, Adam, do you think he's the better quarterback when comparing the two, Spate and O'Korn?
No, I don't. I think when Wilton Spate is healthy and when Wilton Spate is playing like the Wilton Spate that we saw during the first nine games of the year, I was really surprised at his slow start this season. He looked a little bit timid, not as confident, I think. And you also have to factor in that he had three new starters on the offensive line. He had a new passing game coordinator, and he also had new receivers, and he didn't have the benefit of having, you know, seniors like Amara Darbo and J.U. Chesham. So there were a lot of things kind of, I don't want to say stacked against him, but it wasn't the comfort level of last year. So, long answer to a short question, I think when healthy and confident, Wilton Spate is the better quarterback.
Michigan head coach Jim Harbaugh, he complained about the hit at Purdue that knocked Wilton out of the game that will now, you know, take him out for multiple weeks. Adam, what was your assessment of the hit? Do you think it was dirty?
You know, during game speed, it is kind of hard to determine, and I guess when you slow it down, it makes it easier. If you're not Eddie Wilson, who's a guy, and he's from Birmingham, Pontiac area, mm-hmm. the guy that hit Wilton, you don't know exactly the intent. But I can say, even judging by game speed film and even slow down, it does look like that Eddie had time to change his direction. Wilton was clearly seated. His butt was on the ground. I don't think there was any reason to make contact, whether it would have been, you know, where it was on the back of the, you know, kind of top back of the head and neck area, or even if it was just, you know, somewhere along the shoulder or something. I just don't think there was any reason to make contact with the quarterback. Jim Harbaugh, naturally, you know, he's going to defend his players, being a former quarterback himself. I can see where he would say the hit is egregious. Right. I will say that there wasn't really a football play trying to be made. I'll say that.
I have to agree with you on that, Adam, because, I mean, you can clearly see him, you know, taking a seat, and then, you know, his head is turned to the defender. He's clearly down. I thought the defender could have changed direction as well. I'm with you on that, Adam. So, you know, we talked about the defenses in this matchup. You know, and you look at both Michigan State's defense and Michigan's defense, U of M ranks first when it comes to run defense in the Big Ten, first in the nation when it comes to run defense. Michigan State ranks third when it comes to run defense in the conference, 16th in the nation. Do you think it really comes down to the arms of both Lewerke and O'Korn in this matchup when taking those two things in perspective?
Well, absolutely. And kind of selfishly, I want to see a quarterback duel. I mean, we're talking, you know, night game in Ann Arbor, all kinds of energy around this. And of course, we're talking about the defenses. I do hope that this turns into a quarterback duel just for the sake of entertainment purposes. But at the same time, I think if you're a Michigan fan, you want to see how John O'Korn responds and how he commands against Michigan State. And the same thing goes for Brian Lewerke. This will be Brian's first start, his first start against Michigan. He played last year a little bit before he met Jabril Peppers and got his leg broken.
Yeah.
You know, and I got to believe that Brian might have that in the back of his mind a little bit. I mean, you don't know what goes through these guys' heads, you know, unless you're them. And I think that this is a huge game for John. I think this is a huge game for Brian mentally, put last year behind him and really play well against in-state rival and prove that you're the quarterback that Mark D'Antonio says he is. And I believe that he is. I've been impressed, I guess, to say the least. Some of his decision-making, you know, that'll come. But the athletic ability, instincts, and Lewerke has shown a few times that he's got a nice arm. And I don't want to discount Felton Davis either. I think Brian Lewerke and Felton Davis could be a real big connection Saturday for the Spartans.
Yeah, that was very impressive what we saw against Iowa, the connection, the love connection between Brian Lewerke and Felton Davis. Felton, of course, finishing with 9 catches, named actually co-offensive player of the week by the Big Ten Conference. Adam, you know, you look at this matchup. This is the first ever night game between these two football programs. There's going to be a lot of energy in the building and, of course, leading up to this matchup. How surprised were you that this was slated for a 7:30 p.m. kickoff? And what kind of challenges do a night game with two in-state rivals going at it like this, what kind of challenges do that pose for those who didn't want it to be a night game? Because I remember talking with Mark Hollis, MSU athletic director. This was about 2 years ago. And, you know, I asked him whether or not we would ever see a night game football-wise between, of course, Michigan State and Michigan. He said, no, I think it can get out of hand. It can get kind of crazy. What do you make of this being a night game for the first time?
I think similar sentiments were echoed from Michigan as well. And it is kind of, I think, you know, a couple years ago, yeah, would have definitely sounded crazy. Within the past few months, and then we started hearing more rumblings about it, you know, kind of spring and summertime and then entering the season. I wasn't really surprised, but it's kind of funny because, Jim Harbaugh says, you know, that he's a big fan of the noon kickoff, and, anything other than a noon kickoff goes against his, and I quote, football sensibility. So I don't know, you know, from a coach's perspective, you know, he'd want it at noon, but he realizes the players are excited about this. Mark D'Antonio, you know, it doesn't sound like he's had any gripes about a night game whatsoever. So I think that if you just look at it from a branding standpoint, night game, Big House, Michigan State, it's going to be big for recruiting. It's going to be big national perspective. And it's also, you know, with it being in prime time, it shows that, you know, that this rivalry is still, you know, nationally relevant. I think it's not just something that we talk about here. I think with Jim Harbaugh in the mix and Mark D'Antonio, you have two of the best coaches in college football. I mean, what's not to like about that?
Without a doubt. You know, Adam, I love watching Jim Harbaugh's press conferences because I just find Jim Harbaugh on so many levels intriguing. You know, he doesn't, to be honest, his press conferences are boring, but I still find it so intriguing because Harbaugh's just mannerisms when he's at the podium are just entertaining to me. You're at these press conferences, you're at these U of M games, and you have some very colorful exchanges between Harbaugh and yourself. What's it like? What's it been like covering Jim Harbaugh, and what do you dig about his personality?
Well, I got to say, first and foremost, as a coach, Jim Harbaugh, I think it deserves all the respect that he's given. I can certainly understand his personality. Either you like him or you don't. Mm-hmm. I like Jim Harbaugh as a person. I think that he's straightforward, a no BS kind of guy. I can appreciate it. And Jim and I have had our exchanges, and they've been funny. He's also ripped into some guys, you know, for kind of pushing their own little angles. And you know, Jim's not afraid to call out a guy if he thinks. I remember, I won't name the writer, but it was during Big Ten media days in Chicago, and he was continuously asked the same question about social media and attention and backfire and things like that. And Jim Harbaugh said, "Look, are you trying to fill in an article? What do you want me to say?" And so he's not afraid to kind of call out. And I think he's got a real good sense of, you know, if someone's trying to bait him into a controversial thing or so along those lines. And he is entertaining. I mean, a lot of times you don't know what you're going to get out of Jim Harbaugh. I mean, he might start out answering a question kind of slow and, you know, give you a few word answers and you feel like, okay, he's going to move on to the next one. And then boom, he starts breaking out into some, you know, starts telling a story or, you know, what have you. He's Jim Harbaugh, I think, is a coach who realizes, you know, he can recognize the people who are genuinely trying to do a good job, and he respects that. And at the same time, if he thinks that, you know, if you're just trying to sensationalize or get a soundbite or a quote or something like that, he'll shoot you down. So in that regard, I do have a lot of respect for him because he's a, like I said, he's a no BS kind of guy. A lot of fun to cover, Al. I do have to say that. A lot of fun.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, what you see is what you get. He's very entertaining. I saw him. He did the cannonball into the pool. I know there was an event taking place over the weekend with the U of M swimming team, and he participated and jumped off the high dive. He did a cannonball with one knee in the air. He's just an entertaining guy. He's a fun guy. All right, Adam, final question, because, again, we didn't run into each other at Spartan Stadium after the Michigan State win over Iowa. Covering that game and watching Michigan State on both sides of the football, Adam, what kind of message or what kind of statement do you think Michigan State sent beating an Iowa team that the week before had pushed number 4 Penn State to the brink? It came down to one play in that matchup. Michigan State beating a team like that heading into rivalry week here, what kind of statement do you think they sent heading into this matchup?
Well, I think Michigan State said loud and clear that it is not the team that we saw against Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say that. And Iowa, quality opponent, like you just mentioned, going down the wire with Penn State. Penn State needed a last-second play to beat Iowa.
Right.
You know, Kinnick is where dreams go to die, pretty much. So
right.
Penn State was lucky to get out of there. Iowa, I mean, Al, you've heard Mark D'Antonio, I'm sure a lot of your listeners and followers. Mark D'Antonio has long said that Iowa is a program that he emulates. And, you know, he has a lot of respect for Coach Kirk Ferentz. And, you know, he looks at Iowa and wants to do, you know, things in a similar manner. And the same thing with Iowa. Ferentz, you know, very complimentary of Mark D'Antonio. So I think the game was exactly what I expected. I think D'Antonio expected the same type of game, and Ferentz expected it too. And what this said about Michigan State was, this is a tough team. This is a team that's, you know, heard enough of the 3-9. You know, they've heard enough of all that. And now, right now, sitting at 3-1 with, I don't want to call it a statement win because it is a little bit early, but I will say that it is a win that you kind of have to remember. You'll cite it. And I think, you know, as the season goes on, I wouldn't be surprised if Mark D'Antonio and players kind of look back at the Iowa game and say, you know what, I think that's when we started kind of figuring out things. So I think it says, you know, Michigan State's a much closer team, what we saw against Iowa, than what we saw against Notre Dame. And if, you know, but I do expect Michigan to win Saturday. I'd be surprised if both teams combined for more than 40 points. I mean, I'm thinking a 17-14, 17-13 kind of game. So basically, race to 2 touchdowns and a field goal, I feel like Saturday is going to be enough to win it.
Yeah, and it's hard to argue against that, Adam. My man Adam Biggers always bringing it. You can follow him on Twitter at Adam Biggers, Biggers, 81. Adam, thank you so much for your time, and we will see you in Ann Arbor on Saturday, my man.
Always, Al. Thanks a lot for having me on. I'll see you Saturday, man.
You got it. All right, let's hit our final break. When we come back, we do have a caller on line one. Ben, stay on there. I know he wants to chime in on the MLB playoffs. We'll take Ben's call. Again, if you want to weigh in the last 5 minutes of the show, 517-355-WKAR. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We just finished up chatting with Adam Biggers, Michigan, MSU, and Big Ten writer for Fan Rag Sports. Adam doing a great job helping us preview the big matchup this Saturday between the Michigan Wolverines and the Michigan State Spartans. Let's go to line one right now. We've got a caller from East Lansing who wants to weigh in on the MLB playoffs. That's the way we opened up today's Current Sports with. Ben from East Lansing wants to weigh in. Ben, how you doing? And welcome to Current Sports.
Hey, how you doing?
Fantastic. Ben, always good hearing from you. Ben is, for those who don't know, Ben always, you know, is weighing in on Facebook as well. Good hearing your voice, Ben.
Same here. I just want to call and make a correction with the MLB playoff picture.
Okay. Go ahead.
The Yankees play Cleveland in Cleveland to start the series. Boston plays Houston. The winner of tonight's wild card travels to L.A. And I think the Cubs play the NL East winner, whoever that was.
The Washington Nationals.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I believe Verlander is on the mound with Houston against Boston, and I believe Chris Sale is pitching for Boston, I believe.
Yes, gotcha. Yeah, I believe it will be Sale versus JV. But, yeah, that's the way it looks. And tonight, again, the Rockies will take on the D-backs. The winner of that will play the L.A. Dodgers in the NLDS. So, with that being said, Ben, you know, looking at the playoff picture, who are you going with to win the entire enchilada and why?
I have the Cubs and Houston in the World Series. And as much as I hate to say this because my pastor is from Chicago and is a diehard Cubs fan, I am going to say Houston is going to win the World Series.
Okay, Ben is going with the Houston Astros to win the World Series. JV finally gets a ring. Not with the Tigers, though. All right. Ben, thank you so much. Always good chatting with you.
Yep.
All right. So, yeah, Ben is going with the Houston Astros. I think it's going to come down. You know what I want to see? This would be my dream matchup for the playoffs, Isaac. I want to see the Cubs and the Indians go at it. That's what I want to see. I want to see the Cubbies from last year go against the Cleveland Indians. You know, I think the Indians will celebrate for the first time since 1948, baby. Mm-hmm. That'll be a fun matchup. That'll really be a fun matchup.
Yeah, you talk about a dream matchup. That would be a little bit of a dream match, huh? You could say that.
I like that. I like that play on words.
Yeah,
brother.
Yeah.
All right, real briefly, we got 30 seconds, Isaac. But do you love the NBA All-Star modification here?
They needed to do something, so they did the right thing in switching it up, yeah.
It's like a pickup game.
It is.
You know, you got the two highest vote getters just saying, all right, I want you, I want you, I want you. You can go against your teammate if you want to. I love it. You know, they got to breathe some life into it because it is very ho-hum and has become just absolutely boring. All right, we'll be back at it. Same time, same place tomorrow. Thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in and listening. And also much thanks to Adam Biggers. Be easy, people.